As we know, this evening is the commemoration for Yom HaShoah, which is a major debate in many different communities, whether it's something we should give significance to or perhaps not. I always find it interesting that Rav Soloveitchik was so fierce on his opinion that this is a meaningless day and there's no significance to it at all, and yet all of our modern Orthodox communities all over the world seem to ignore him about this. I'm not sure why. But regardless, I always think it's a wonderful opportunity for us at least to get ourselves back into some of the incredible history and some of the amazing and inspiring stories that took place in the times of the Shoah and the times of the Holocaust. So what I have here is, obviously we're not going to read the whole thing, and the reason I gave it out is because I think you would find it very interesting on your own. One of the great poskim, one of the great Torah personalities in the generation of the Holocaust, of the Shoah, was someone by the name of Rav Aronson. And you know, sometimes because there's a tshuva sefer called Shalos HaTshuvos Mimamakim, written by Rav Ephraim Mushri, which got a lot of publicity and everybody's heard of it, sometimes some of the other great Torah personalities of the time sort of get ignored. And we don't always pay attention to the contributions that they made and the challenges that they were faced with, which were of equal intensity and proportion to those of Rav Ephraim Mushri. So here there was a beautiful article that was written about some of the article is really like 25 pages long, but I just took out the first part of it, which is all connected. It basically goes through three or four different segments of questions that he was faced with. It tells you the history about it, a little bit of the background of the halacha, and the psak that he gave. And I think it's just it's a good opportunity for us just to see a little bit about what he went through. And here, the part that I picked out was with regard to On one occasion, they were in the ghettos, and he writes that, here, we can read the history. You look at the second line, Reka Histori. So in the article, they give you the background of the Shiloh that he was presented with. Ha'irua Hitrachesh be March 1942. This happened in March of 1942. Yamim Sfurim La'achar Higiyam La'machane Ha'avoda Kinun. That was right after they got to this labor camp, wherever that was. I don't know the background of this. And they were faced with a circumstance where they had no water and they had very little food and they were expected to be doing incredibly intensive labor. And after the end of the day, they came to them and they were willing to give them marak ta'im v'gam samich. They were willing to feed them this soup. And they said that this was going to be nutritious for them, this was going to be healthy for them. V'al rekazu hischil havikuach. And he writes that now, all of a sudden, broke out surrounding this story, surrounding this issue, that on one evening they were given this soup. All of a sudden, a vikuach breaks out, a major disagreement, a major dispute. Bo natlu chelek harabbanim etalmidei chachamim shehayu b'makom. And it's amazing when you read this, that rabbanim at the time were fighting with each other, they were arguing, they were disagreeing about issues of this kind of magnitude. It was just amazing. So what was the shaila? He says as follows. This is a quotation from Rav Aronson's writings. Chela kaya savur. Some of the Talmidei Chachamim who were there with us felt sheraka sherha anashim. Obviously, the soup was non-kosher. They weren't serving them a, you know, gourmet deluxe kosher food. They were serving them treifa food. And the question broke out: do we have a right to eat the food or not? What's the question? It's pikuach nefesh. He says, no, it's not a pikuach nefesh right now. We're not going to die right now if we neglect to take this food. Maybe we'll die later, but we're not going to die now. So he says, Chela kaya savur, some of the Talmidei Chachamim who were there felt, Sheraka sherha anashim yechalshu v'yargishu chulsha mutar lahem. The only time that you're allowed to eat the non-kosher food is when you're mamish, about to faint, about to drop dead, then you're going to be allowed to have the heter of eating non-kosher food. Lu masam, and I was the contrarian. I was the one who didn't agree with all them. Savor ha'yisi, I personally felt, hayoz v'hadavar karach b'sakanos nefashos, since this is a major pikuach nefesh, chayiv kalecha miyad lechol. Everybody has an obligation that they have to eat. V'lo lechakos ad yitzias haneshama. You don't wait till the last minute to take care of yourself. We don't say pikuach nefesh is only at the last moment of life. Pikuach nefesh is something we need to take into account way before. And my father, just as an aside, my father always says over the terrible story that he had a contemporary who didn't understand what it meant. There was a miscommunication between himself and the doctors about this person's wife. So the man's wife was in the hospital, and it was before Yom Kippur, and she was a deathly ill patient. She was very, very weak. And the man was trying to figure out whether or not his wife should fast on Tisha B'Av. When you have a deathly ill patient, obviously they should not be fasting on Tisha B'Av. But he went and he asked the doctor, if she fasts on Tisha B'Av, will she die? And the doctor said, no, she's not going to die. So he said, well, if she's not going to die, then it's a situation where there's no heter pikuach nefesh, and she has to make sure that she fasts on Tisha B'Av. The miscommunication was that the doctor meant to say she's not going to die. It's not necessarily so that she's going to die on Yom Kippur. Of course she's going to die sooner if she doesn't eat for a day, but he didn't understand that that was what the shaila was. And of course, when we ask a question about who should fast and who should not fast, we don't just look at whether or not the person's going to die right now. You have to look in the long term, and even a day from now, 2 days from now, if it's going to hasten the person's demise, we need to make sure that we don't do anything that will involve us doing that. So he says, this was a major discussion in the time. Do you say that pikuach nefesh is only when you have an imminent situation of pikuach nefesh that is bifanenu? Or do you say that no, a pikuach nefesh la'achar azman, if this is going to lead to a future situation of pikuach nefesh, then maybe we have a heter to do it right now. And he says that in the Tshuvas Mimam Akim, skip the next paragraph, he says he has a discussion about pikuach nefesh la'achar azman. Look at the quotations. Bo elai ben kesel le'asar. The Rav Ashri writes in his Tshuvas Mimam Akim that ben kesel le'asar means in aseres yimei tshuva, there was a group of individuals who came to him, v'nafsham lishal higia, and they had the following question. Im mutar lahem le'achalas hamarak, are they allowed to eat the soup? Mikivon she'achshav, ein kan mishum pikuach nefesh she'yidcha es ha'iser. Af, even though, she'la'achar zman, that after a while, yuchlash v'yavo lidei sakanas nefashos. So, he says that this was the question they were faced with, and this is what they were bothered by, and they couldn't figure out what to do. It was a major dispute, a major disagreement. How do you understand the pikuach nefesh? And I just wonder to myself, imagine the scene. Everybody's standing there. The Germans, the Nazis are putting soup in front of you, and no one's willing to take, because everyone's busy having a machlokas whether or not we're allowed to eat this, because is it really a pikuach nefesh, or perhaps is it not? It's just amazing. It's really amazing. And he says the reason why they were so concerned about this is because the Gemara says in Yuma Daf Lamites that if a person eats non-kosher food, it's metamtem es halev. And the question is, well, obviously under certain conditions you're allowed to. However, maybe what? What?
What's the physical analogy?
I'm sorry?
Is it really metamtem halev, or is it like a physical?
I don't know. You know, this is almost like a Gilgal HaNeshama's land. You know, I don't claim to be an expert in any of these things. You know, somebody asked me the other day about Ruach Ra, what are the parameters of, you know, leaving an onion cut outside of the fridge or open egg? I don't know. I'm not a, you know, these are areas of halacha that I don't really know much about. Maybe I should, but I don't. So, he says, what was the ultimate psak? Rav Aronson Savar, go to the next paragraph. Ki yesh lechol miyad. Rabbi Aronson said, you must eat immediately. He says, what's the question? So you look at the next one where he has in quotations. Birosi, when I saw, Shamispar Godol Shayuhudim Mislabtim, I was the Rav. I made the psak that everybody has to eat, it's Pikuach Nefesh. Ah, you're not going to die tonight. Doesn't matter. It's Pikuach Nefesh Le'achar Zman. You're not going to have the energy. You're not going to have the wherewithal. You're going to die sooner when you're going to run out of energy. So he says, I made the psak. I told everybody, absolutely, don't worry about the timtum alev. This is what I have to do. This is what has to be done. This is what we should do. However, he says, I noticed after I gave the psak, Shemispar gadol shel yehudim mislaptim. I saw a bunch of them were hesitating. They weren't so clear that I gave the right psak. Im lechol es hamarak hatareif. Ubi yodeh inyan karach v'sakanas nefashos. And because I knew that this is a real pikuach nefesh, it's not a joking matter. Lakachti kaf marak, I stood up in front of all of them, and I went and I was the first one to take a spoon and eat from that soup. Ula'achar she'amarti b'kol rames habracha, I called out she'akol niyebed varo, achalti es kaf marak, I ate the soup, hisbarti la'anashim, and I explained to the people, ki she'akol niyebed varo, what does it mean when you say she'akol niyebed varo? Here's a beautiful lesson. We say the bracha so many times a day, you drink a soda, you drink a cup of water, you have a cup of tea, a cup of coffee. He says, what does it mean when we say a bracha she'akol niyebed varo? Mashma uso hi. What we mean when we say it is, she'kol ma she'misrachesh im ha'adam. Everything that happens to us in life is novea meiratzen habore. What does it mean? Shehakol. It means everything is niyebed varo. Everything is because The Ribbono Shel Olam wanted that this is the way it should be. So he wanted us to be here in the labor camp, and he wants us to be doing all this terrible avodas perach, and he wants us to be eating the treifa soup. And on that too we make a bracha, shehakol niyeh bedvar, because this too was the will of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Anachnu mitzuvim lachayos, he says, we have an obligation to live on. Ulahachazik es nafshenu. Divarai achein hishpiu, and he said there were a number of people who listened to me. Ukimat kulam achlu es hamarak. Almost all the people who were there, who were present at the time, went along with what I did, and they ate the soup, and they did not have any hesitation. But now broke out a whole other discussion, and that was, really, are you supposed to make a bracha when you eat non-kosher food? That's not so clear. So the rabbi got up and he made a bracha and he said, it's bikuach nefesh. Okay, we agree with you. We're going to eat the non-kosher soup. Really? You're supposed to make a bracha, shakol niyabedvar. And he gave a beautiful drasha. And he said, oh, shakol niyabedvar. Isn't this an amazing story here? It's like, it's just amazing. And this is why I put the whole story. We're not going to get through the 7 pages. But the whole story went through a number of, you see, 1.7. Should you do, let's say they would serve you non-kosher bread. Would you make an atilas yadayim and a birchas hamazon? And what about, do they have to do tshuva? Should they get out alive? Do they have to do tshuva for eating machalas asuras? And maybe you should say no. And then they got into a discussion about a dintara that they had, whether something's considered treif. Isn't mamish unbelievable, the story? Let's see. Yeah? Oh, so that's the question. That's the question. Let's say, for example, the Shulchan Aruch talks about a similar case, not exactly the same. Shulchan Aruch says, let's say you have to have a chole on Shabbos who needs to have cooked food. Chole, whatever it is, the doctor says they need to have a steak. It's an unusual case, because usually a chole doesn't need a piece of steak. And I used to think it was unusual until I went to Camp Simcha this summer. And you see that some of these kids, not just kids, but adults are also the same. Some of them have no appetite for anything, and when you finally convince them to eat one thing, it could be that their appetite is only for one very specific food. So it really would be what the Shulchan Aruch describes on Shabbos about being Mechal Shabbos for somebody who only is allowed to eat this and this food. So you say to yourself, what do you mean? You're only going to eat a steak? So eat something else. The answer is no. When you understand what's going through the mind of a chola and the appetite that they have to build up in order to eat anything, so you'll begin to understand that when they actually bring themselves to say they want something, you have to do whatever it is that would facilitate that. So the Shulchan Aruch says, let's say you have an opportunity to serve the chole cooked food. The problem is you don't have any cooked food, so you have to take a raw piece of meat out of the freezer. You have to cook it in the oven. You have to violate the Isser of Bishul B'Shabbos. So what would you say? You have to violate the Isser of Bishul or Afiyah, whatever you're going to do. You're going to bake it, you're going to cook it. So it's better that you should have a non-Jew violate the Aver. Problem is, then that would be Bishul Akum, right? So obviously the chol is allowed to eat it because that's Bikuach Nefesh. But what do I do with my pot? So a non-Jew came, cooked in my pot. Normally we assume when a non-Jew cooks Bishul Akum in the pot, we assume it has to be kosher. But here the non-Jew was cooking in the pot because on Shabbos, that was what was supposed to be done. They were doing a mitzvah by doing that. And we saved ourselves from violating the malach on Shabbos by having the non-Jew do it on our behalf. So this is the question. Would you say that pot has to be kosher, or do you say no? Once there was a reason why the Nachri was doing it, and it made sense that the Nachri should do it, maybe you say, okay, so it's as if this is not treifa food at all, it's as if it's not Bishul Akum. Maybe we're even allowed to eat the leftovers after Shabbos is over. Let's say she made a big steak, it turns out the person didn't eat it, so it was cooked beheter, maybe you should say there's no problem at all. So that gets to your question. Yeah. Yeah, but that's not eating treifa food. There's a difference between an iser zman and an iser on the food itself. So let's see. So then he goes into this issue. Turn to the next side of the page. Mitoch psikazu also sugya hilchatit nosefes. He says, all of a sudden, Rav Aronson writes, I made this psak. I got up in public and I drank from the soup. And I make a shakol niyabedvaru. And I made my beautiful drasha. And everyone's all inspired. But then we had a discussion in Levarach b'tadirus ha-machalas asuras ha-ne'achalim l'pikuach nefesh. Hey, Rabbi, one second. You're really sure that that's the right thing to do? We're willing to eat the soup, but are you really supposed to make a bracha machalas asuras? So, skip down. Reka hilchati. What's the background of the story? He says, there is a sugya lehalacha where the Gemara says, when you have something that you're not allowed to eat, let's say tevel, says a person goes ahead and eats something that you have not yet been mafris trumas ha-maisris. So are you allowed to make a bracha on that? Says the Gemara. Botzea beirech nietz Hashem. You're not allowed to make a bracha on something which is not allowed to be eaten, which is not allowed to be consumed. Let's say you have a person has a tremendous yetzer hara, and you go and you decide that you want to eat in a non-kosher restaurant for whatever reason, not judging the person, but that's what they do. So does the person go and make a bracha before they sit down to eat? At least I'm making a bracha. Rav Asher Weiss told me that last year he had a person call him up before Pesach. I was talking to him before Pesach about some complicated questions about Mechiras Chametz. We had some interesting questions about Mechiras Chametz, about Jewish partners, non-Jewish partners, intermarried. I don't know if someone was at my shiur when I mentioned the story. It was an amazing story. So I was talking to him about some of those questions. So he mentioned to me, he said, you know, Shai Mechiras Chametz seems to be getting very, very interesting in recent years. I said, why? He said he had a guy called him up last year. He was intermarried. And the guy said he's afraid about the Isser of Chametz B'Pesach. It's an Isser Kares. He wanted to know, can he sell his Chametz to his wife? So it's like amazing, you know. Here you have a guy who's living his whole life intermarried with a non-Jewish woman. He has non-Jewish children, but the Yisr Chametz B'Pesach, he's concerned about. So what do? You just hang up the phone and say you're out of your mind? Get your priorities straight? Or do you say, it's a beautiful thing. The guy's Yetzer Hara. He met this woman. It's a secretary from his office. Whatever it was, he ended up getting married to her. He had children with her. Okay, he made a mistake. He fell in. He's doing something wrong. But in the end of the day, now he wants to save himself from the violation of Kares, of Chametz B'Pesach. Why shouldn't we help him? But on the other hand, to go sell it to his wife is a little bit of a joke. But I'm just saying, not always do you assume that everybody always does the right thing. So sometimes, says the Gemara, you have a person who does the wrong thing, eats non-kosher food, bemezid. So the Gemara says, no, but say a berach ne'et, says you can't make a brach on such a thing. You're doing the wrong thing. How are you going to say, asher kedushanu mitzvosev etzivanu? It doesn't make sense, actually, when you make a bracha, berachas aneni, don't say kedushanu mitzvosev etzivanu. But either way, how can you mention Hashem's name while you're about to eat something? So, over here, he says as follows. Hapsika, what was the psak? Hakviya hilchatit haita brura, v'halacha mufureshes hakach nichtava b'shulchan aruch. Yesh levarach bracha rishona, when a person needs to eat non-kosher food, not that you have a taifa and you go to a restaurant somewhere, when a person needs to eat it, because you have no other option, so he says, you have to make a bracha, and that is why he made the bracha here. Now skip to the next line where he has the exact quotation from Rabbi Aronson. Im levarach betadiris ha-machalas ha-suros, ha-ne'achalam le-pikuach nefesh. So he said, we got into a discussion. This is probably not going to be the last time that we're going to be presented with non-kosher soup. So we can all fight about it now, but let's think about the next time. What are we going to do then? He says, Nahagdi levarech amili dehetera shebetoch ha-michel omayim shahakol. How amazing. What a genius. He says, they served us not only the soup, they served us water. So I had in mind when I made the shahakol that it should really be on the water. Or something in the soup is kosher. There's got to be some ingredients in the soup that have to be kosher. So Rabbi Aronson had this brilliant idea. He said, you're right, it's a big shaila in Shulchan Aruch whether or not you're supposed to make a bracha on non-kosher food. But when I made the shahakol ni'evid varo, I made it on the kosher ingredients in the food. On whatever else was in there, on all the water that was there. Such an amazing presence of mind to think like this. The Kavanasi, and he says, when I made the bracha, Shahakol kol ma she'irelanu afgam zo shehinenu mechrachem lechol treifos l'kiyam nafshenu niya bedvaru, that all of that was also because Hashem wanted it, and nase beratzon Hashem. Then he says, go to where it says 1.3. Now the shaila was, okay, Rabbi, so you got up and you ate your soup, and you made the bracha, shahakol niya bedvaru, and you gave a drasha. What about a bracha achrona? Now, first of all, did he eat enough? Did he eat the shear? I would imagine they gave everybody a tiny little amount of soup. So you have to have a certain amount in order to make a bracha achronis. He says, now we get into a whole other discussion in the camps. Everybody's sitting and eating their soup, and now they start fighting again. All the Talmidei Chachamim figuring out, are we supposed to make a bracha achrona after eating this non-kosher soup that we agreed with you we're going to make the bracha on, bracha rishona? What about the bracha achrona? So he says, Hasheila, im yesh levarach bracha achrona le'achar achilas machalas asurus, umahi abracha. What bracha am I going to make after I finish eating this non-kosher soup? He said he made a psak, yesh levarach bracha achrona. You're supposed to make a bracha achrona. Why? Kivan shalacha mechayeves bracha al machalas asurus anachalam letzerach pikuach nefesh. Since the Shulchan Aruch paskins that when you eat food which is non-kosher, for the purposes of pikuach nefesh, you have to make a bracha. Again, if you go to the non-kosher restaurant by choice, so you don't make a bracha. If you eat tevel by choice, you don't make a bracha. But if you go ahead and you have no other choice because pikuach nefesh, so you do make a bracha. He says, once the Torah tells me I have an obligation to make a bracha, af kan, he says, the same thing he assumed should be about the bracha achrona. Why should it be any different? I have no other option. What? I shouldn't thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for giving me the opportunity to have something to eat? So you say, I'm eating non-kosher food. Yeah, but the Torah said this is what I should do under the circumstance. So you go down to where he writes, Al kol ma'ashe barasa. What bracha are you going to make? Bari nefashos rabos v'chesronan al kol masha barosos. He says as follows. Minayin yinikas koach chiyus hasviya shebemaychal ha'aser. Halohu shal klipos hatmeos legamri. Once again, he gets up and he gives a drasha. What bracha achron are we going to make on the soup? Bari nefashos. What do we say in bari nefashos? So when we made the bracha rishon, we said, shehakol niyeh bedvaro. Everything that happens to me in my life is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants it to happen. And therefore that means even eating the non-kosher food, and even being here in this labor camp, and being tortured and beaten by the Nazis, this is shehakol niyeh bedvaro. Now what's the bracha achrona? Al kol ma shebarasa l'achayos behem nefesh kol chai. We thank you for everything that you created, said Rav Aronson. Does that not include non-kosher items that you created also? Brilliant. This is absolutely brilliant. So he gets him and he starts giving a drasha. Shouldn't we thank the Ribono Shel Olam for everything that he put into this world that under some circumstances are going to help us out? Because from the outset, he created it. And we have to be thankful to him for that as well. Rak b'shvil l'hachayos behem nefesh kol chai. Did God not put all of this non-kosher soup into the world just so that we can survive? Isn't that... What? Yeah. That's true, but he says, in our situation, the bracha is talking to us. That's what he says. This bracha is talking to us. The bracha Rishona was talking to us, and the bracha Achrona is talking to us. Koach ki yumam hu, our whole right to existence right now, the only reason why we're still around is because migzera sakanas nefashos bezman hazeh pikuach nefesh. It's only because we have a situation of pikuach nefesh, and therefore we resort to kol masha barasa. We resort to anything that you have created that can possibly help us out to make it through this predicament that we find ourselves in, we're going to use. So I was thinking about it. Here he is in the camps, making all these drushes and chashbums. I was thinking about it. How many times a day I make a shahakal, or I forget to make a shahakal, I make a bari nefashos, or I don't make a bari nefashos. I've never thought about these words. Never. I was just amazed. Forgetting about the fact that such a discussion can be going on in the first place. But then he's able to break it down and actually understand what the words are, and he teaches all of us. Every time you make a shahakal and a bari nefashos, understand what it is that you're saying and appreciate the words that are being said. And he says, after he made this argument and after he said the drasha, everybody listened to him and they went along and they made the bracha achrona as well. Skip down to the next part. Ofen achidas machalas asurus. How are you supposed to eat the machalas asurus? What does he mean? So the background of the story is in 1944, we were in Auschwitz, number 3. I don't know exactly what that is. Ha'irua, here's the story in quotations. Auschwitz, dibarti alev acharedim shebe'im ochlim. If we're going to eat some word in German, some non-kosher food, or chametz bepesach, or we're going to have to eat chametz on Pesach, because that's all we have, and we already just made the argument that pikuach nefesh doesn't only mean pikuach nefesh right now, it means even pikuach nefesh lachazman. What does it say? Oh, salami. Oh. Hot dogs and salami. Interesting, okay? Or if we have to eat chametz bepesach, yochlu pachos mikizayis, ubehefsig yosir mikidei achilas pras. Unbelievable. So he sits there and he tells the people, look, we have non-kosher food, we have a heter to eat it. But there are guidelines on how we're supposed to eat it. You think you're allowed to gobble up the whole soup in one shot? You have to eat it along with the guidelines of a person on Yom Kippur, how they would eat if they were a chola. So if you have a chola sheyesh basakana on Yom Kippur and you can't afford for them to take breaks along the way and eat, so then you have them eat normally, called tzarcha. But if you have a person who's a little bit of a chola and needs to eat on Yom Kippur, but they can do it sporadically, that's obviously better, chatzi shir. That's what the Gemara discussed last parak in Yuma. So here he says, I advise the people that when we're eating the non-kosher food, we should make sure to eat less than a kezayis at a time, and we should make sure that we eat it behef sikiyosim mekidei achilas pras. And he says that this is what everybody did. Everybody listened to me, which is also so counterintuitive. You have people who finally are given a bowl of soup for crying out loud. You just wasted the last half an hour trying to figure out, are we allowed to eat it? Are we not allowed to eat it? Are we going to make a bracha rishona? Not going to make a bracha rishona? Do we make a bracha achrona? Do we not make a bracha achrona? Now you're telling me I can't even eat the thing. You're telling me I can eat it one spoon at a time, I have to wait 9 minutes in between? Unbelievable. And the people actually listen to it. Why?
if you grew up in that tribe,
yeah,
then why would you have to resort to?
Well, that was the premise of the first part of the question. They felt they weren't in a vade pikuach nefesh now, so they haven't had to eat.
His psak, I'm saying, it's in conflict with his psak, was you are.
Right, but he says, no, he's just saying that the definition of pikuach nefesh means even pikuach nefesh le'achas man, which is true. But he's arguing that that doesn't mean that you have a right to eat everything now. If there's not going to be any detriment to my health by spreading it out over the next hour, so then I may as well do that. That was his idea.
You could also argue you don't know.
You never know.
Yeah.
Yeah, you never know. But I was just amazed by the whole thing. Look at the next part. Unbelievable.
Presence of mind even in that time.
Yeah, the whole thing is unbelievable. You go a little further. 1.5, you see? Schnaz, 1944 in Auschwitz. Again, the same place. Lamachana higiu Yehudim mehungaria. There's a whole group of Jews who came from Hungary. Rabbi Mehem, Tamid Chacham v'Yerushamayim, Tmidim Akpidim and Mitzvahs. A number of them were so careful about all the mitzvahs. Bein Nehem, one of the great personalities there was Rab Chaim Roth, Rabbi Shalachas HaKehilos. He was the Rav of one of the towns. Kachosav Shel Rav Roth, Hidaldulu Ba'avodas HaKfiya Mefareches. He had no energy left, this Rabbi Roth had no energy left after all the labor-intensive work that they made them do all day long. Rav Aronson Hetzliach LaHavir LaAvoda Kala Yoser. Somehow this tzaddik Rav Aronson got him to do some easier work, to clean the kitchen, to clean the bathroom, something instead of going out to the fields. Be'ezroso shel ha'kapo yehudi shetztayin la'ezroso ba'achad. They got some kapo to help him out, whatever it was. Harav shechneas ha'kapo, the Rabbi Aronson told this kapo, shem yatzel tamen chacham kazeh, if you're going to go and save this tamen chacham and allow him to have an easier job, hareo bebechinas yesh kono lama b'sha'achas. He started quoting him a whole shtickle Torah from a Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Yesh Kono Lama B'Sha'achas. Here's your chance. Here's your moment, Kapo. So, you have a chance to do something. HaBachar Achen Sikin Atzmo, this young man, when he hears about it, says, okay, if he tells me Yesh Kono Lama B'Sha'achas, may as well try it. So he goes ahead and he risks his own life to go and change the job of this Rabbi Roth. And Hever Es Rav Roth, the commando Handasa Shebepikudo. Amartilo, I said to him the following. This yeshiva bachar, who's the kapo, goes to his supervisor and he says, you ever heard of the Gemara when it says, Yesh kono lama b'sha'achas? Amartilo kapo, ulai zachisa v'nimnisa l'mishra zu. Maybe the only reason why you're here is in order that you should be able to help this one Jew and make sure that he doesn't die. V'lo nefeshachas atamatzil, elo shalosh nefeshas. Not only are you saving him, but you're saving three lives. Gamas chaye shnei bana matzir mata asui lahatzil. He says you're going to end up saving his two children also. Why? Because if you save him, then his children will have the energy to want to continue to live also. Zman Rab Hisas Hakapo. He was hesitating. He wasn't sure. Hisatev b'shtika. For the besof amar. In the end, he said, Tov ani muchan histaken. I'm willing to put my life in danger. Machar ani maviras harav el kamando handasa shali. I'm going to change his job. Avru kama yamim, rarav mi, I don't know what that is, hitoshesh. After a couple of days, he was feeling much better because he wasn't doing this difficult labor outside in the field anymore. He was doing much easier work. Mamish nehan nesi leroso, I was so excited to see, kishu meschazek umavri yom liyom. I saw that every day he was getting healthier and healthier, stronger and stronger. I was so happy that at least I negotiated for him and he made up getting himself there. Gam shnei banav atzirim his osheshu v'yivriu hodos the mitzarchei ha'ochel shaviyam harav etzliach la'avilem. Their father brought them food of v'ikar manos marak shehu hevi milahem mimatbeach ha'ss shahayelo sipuk rav kishtach stakalti al miyuadei harav al shnei banav v'chashavti belibi. I thought to myself, yesh li baruch Hashem chelek b'mitzvah zu. All Rav Aronson can think is, baruch Hashem, here we are in the ghetto and we're all dying from this horrible condition that we're being put in. Baruch Hashem, how many people had the chance to actually save another Jew's life and his two little children? Zachisi v'yisa shliach l'dvar mitzvah. How lucky I was that the Ribbono shel Olam allowed me to be the facilitator of a mitzvah, to get them through this. Erev echad, one night, tava ha-kapo eser avroth l'din Torah. One night, the kapo comes, and he brings out Rabbi Roth to a din Torah. Mitoch Zam Rav, he's furious at him. Kishu mevakish merav Anderson l'shamesh kedayin aposel. What happened? So the kapo comes. Did I copy the same page twice? Yeah. Sorry. All right. So all of a sudden he comes and he brings Rav Aaronson out and he says, I want you to be the Dayan and I'm being Toveya Rabbi Roth to a Din Torah. What happened? Hashayla. Hayim nitan l'chayiv adam l'echol treif b'mikra shel pikuach nefesh. Am I allowed to make someone eat non-kosher food when there's pikuach nefesh? U'lechilufim. Hayim yesh l'hachnis l'matzav shel sakonas nefoshos kedei l'hatzil adam shu atzmo niknas l'sakonas chayim biglal hakpada al machalas asura. How much should a person go out of their way to eat kosher food? Go to the next line. Hakapu chazer al tiyuno. Who is takein kedei l'hatzil yudi gada batara? I went out of my way, the kapo says, to make this tzaddik, this Rabbi Roth, be able to continue to live. Yudi chai kalamar sheyia lo hasikui liyisha'er b'chayim. I wanted that he should have the opportunity to stay alive. Yarbitz Torah b'Rabim b'Yisrael. Ani oses os lahatzul nefesh miYisrael kedei liskos al yidei zeh b'chelek olam haba. You promised me, Rabbi Aaronson, that I'm going to olam haba. Yesh kon olam b'sha'achas. That's why I did it. I wouldn't have done it otherwise. It's not worth risking my life. And he says, Amar ulam me'achav ha'raba zeh mitnazer me'achidas treif. V'lachein ein lo kol sikui liyisha'er b'chayim. Now I save Rabbi Roth. I sent him to the lesser... the less severe place to work, and now he's refusing to eat the non-kosher food. So he's going to die anyway. So now I have a Din Torah, a claim against him. I risked my own life to save his life in order that he should be able to live on and teach Torah to the Jewish people after he gets out of here. But now he thinks he's such a wise guy. He wants to be a machmir and not eat the non-kosher food, not a my cheshbon. I never would have risked my life for him if I knew he was going to die anyway. Can you imagine? And he asks Rabbi Aaronson to be the dayan on his din Torah that he has. V'lachein yesh b'dayti achel mimachar. Now I want to undo what I did. I want to put him back into the old job that he had because it's not worth me risking my life if he's not going to take care of himself in the new job and give himself a fighting chance of surviving. So the rabbi, what's his tina back? Rabbi Roth, what's your story? He says, Lo shavik inish hatera v'achel yisura. I have every right, like the Gemara says, to say, I'm not interested in eating the non-kosher food. Lo shavik hetera va'achel yisura. If I can figure out how to get myself kosher food, so I'll be a little hungrier. I'll wait a little longer. I'm not going to give in to eat the non-kosher food. So they get into this whole discussion over here, and the psak was skipped down a little bit. Hapsika, what was the psak? Niker midvarav ki hiskim im amadasa rav roth v'savar she'en l'chayiv adam lechol treif hachi yargish ishit ki higia l'matzav shel pikuach nefesh. If the person individually feels that they are not in a state of acute pikuach nefesh right now and they can make it until the next meal when they find some kosher food somewhere, they have a right to decide that. Ulai b'chozos tivater al drisha secha l'achriach rav v'gadol b'tara she'yolcha treifas. So can you imagine? This is the Din Torah that they're having. And he says, Ulai b'chozos, maybe with all this tivater al drisha secha, do me a favor. Maybe you can do me a favor. Just eat the non-kosher food. Look, we made a deal here. I told him he's going to Olam Haba. Let's just, come on. Ulam, hatnai l'kach haya ki rav roth yischayev lechol gam min hamara kalok hasher im yura matzah b'riyusa. You want to be machmir on yourself? Maybe we'll allow you to. But at least promise me, if you see that things are getting to a position where you're not going to survive anymore, you can't be machmer anymore. Because it's not fair. This guy gave up his life for you in order that you should be able to survive, that you should be able to continue on. You're not being fair to him. And the story just goes on and on and on. It's just an amazing story here. As you'll see in the next paragraph, he gets into a discussion. After they were liberated, they got into a discussion. Im tzrichim l'tshuva v'kapara machalas asuras l'pikuach nefesh, do we have to do tshuva for the non-kosher food that we ate, or perhaps not? Maybe we had a heter to do it. It was mitoch ones, it was pikuach nefesh, and therefore we don't have to do any tshuva. Then he talks about, what about the fact that we wanted to wash our hands before and we wanted to bench afterward? Anyway, you read the rest of this. It's already time for the other shiur, but I think stories like this are worthy of our attention at least one time a year to think about the incredible mesiras nefesh, but not only to think about that, to think about the opportunity that we have to perform mitzvahs in such an easy fashion. And our generation, we're so blessed, and we just never give the time to think about the unbelievable brachas that we make, the understanding that lies behind all the words of Chazal and the brachas that they instituted, and what we have the opportunity to thank the Ribbono Shel Olam every day for the mitzvahs that we perform, for the relationship that we have with Him, and for all of the incredible history that came before us, that taught us what the significance of all of these brachas and these mitzvahs really are. Tonight, at least whether or not you observe Yom HaShoah, at least it's a time for us to appreciate the incredible Mesiras Nefesh and the unbelievable wherewithal that these tzaddikim had to think about such intricate sugyas and to actually fight about it and to debate the issues in a very serious way that were coming up in their generation. So,